Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And it's so good to have you back again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. In the second half hour today, Skip Rung, the President and Executive Director of Oregon Nanoscience and Microtechnologies Institute, is going to stop in, and he is a lot of fun. You're going to really enjoy that. And in the first half hour, Clayton Teague is here. Yes, the former director of the National Nanotechnology Coordination Office stops in and clears up some serious questions. If you remember last week's program, we were quite worried about his sudden leaving and what it might mean inside the organization, and our fears were sort of put to rest when Chief of Staff Jeff Holdridge got a hold of us from his vacation to tell us that the NNCO was indeed alive and well.
I've been learning that the word is not getting around.
So it turns out there's no scandal, there's no problem, there's nothing wrong. I mean, Clayton Teague gave his notice that he was going to be leaving well in advance to the Science and Technology organization, and they've been looking for a replacement, just haven't found one yet because he's a hard guy to replace. So there's no story there. But there is a story of cover-up. It turns out that the reason all those questions came up in the first place is because of a lower-level employee in the organization, styling herself as communications director, said that the public doesn't need to know, and that an agency that is publicly funded to the tune of about $2 billion can operate in secret. That started the whole thing in the first place. Anyway, Jeff had suggested that I talk directly with the deputy right now, Sally Tinkle. And so I got a hold of Sally last week and made an appointment to have a conversation with her. She was very happy to do that. We set up a time, and this is what I got when I called her phone.
The party you have called,
Sally Tinkle,
cannot be reached.
Very strange. Suddenly aborting the interview without an explanation. Well, my next contact happened to be with a lady, very nice lady, by the name of Marlo Epstein. And Marlo didn't at first tell me what she was doing. She was intercepting the interview.
I'm trying to figure it out, but I will, I would love to get you guys to touch base. So, I am working on that. I wish I could help you out a little more. I'm going to try to send you a little bit of information in a bit, just to...
Okay, well, that's cool. Well, you're going to get back with me anyway. Let me know when I can talk to Sally, right?
Yes, sir, will do.
So she led me to believe that she was going to be able to have that interview with Sally after all, until I heard later that there would be no interview with Sally, that all my contact would have to be with her. Of course, we rejected that. We're not going to have our news filtered through a communications director, a spin doctor, with a public organization that is operating on public funds. Well, Clayton Teague, the former director, got a hold of us and cleared everything up, and we're so grateful for that.
I was a little concerned about the statement about sort of sounded like there was something mysterious going on with respect to my stepping down as NNCO director. It was sort of quite ordinary after serving for 8 years. I guess at some point everything had to come to a stop, and that was the situation here. I had, back in 2003, taken the position and offered to me by OSTP to become NNCO director, and expected to be a one-year appointment, maybe a two-year appointment, and really felt a great honor and a great privilege to have had the opportunity to serve for the 8 years that it ended up being. And but at the same time, felt that it was time for everything to stop and to hand over the leadership to a new person at the NNCO. It just, 8 years is a long time.
When did you decide that you were wanting to leave? Did you give a short notice, or did they know for some time? They haven't replaced you. That's the reason for the question.
Yeah, they're in the process of doing that. At least my understanding is that OSTP and the Nanoscale Science, Engineering, and Technology Subcommittee is in the process of looking at candidates, and we'll be making a selection here very shortly. I had discussed my retirement from stepping down as Indian Field Director and retirement from Federal Service, which I did about a couple of weeks following my stepping down as Indian Field Director. I retired from Federal Service.
Mm-hmm.
And I had discussed that with the OSDP back sometime in last year. So they were expecting it, and they had sort of made the decision as well that it would be a good time for a transition.
So they had plenty of time then to find your replacement. But, you know, I must say you're so highly respected in the nanotechnology community, and you've done such a sensational job of leading the agency over these last 8 years. As Jeff Holdridge told me, he says, "Well, we sure miss Clayton." He says he's your wit, your leadership, your insights, the things that you brought. You're going to be a hard guy to replace.
Well, thank you very much for that. Really appreciate your saying so. But I'm sure there's many other very qualified folks in the nanotechnology community that will do an equally good job of leading the NNCO. I have great trust in the overall community and the strength of the many people that are out there to take over the leadership.
Well, Sally Tinkle, I guess, has only been the deputy for six months or so. Did you hire her yourself, or does she come from some other source?
She was the result of, again, a selection process. We had announced that we were looking for OSDP, and I had announced that we were looking for a position to serve as deputy director of the NNCO. And this was sent out to all the members of the NSET subcommittee, and we got a large number of highly qualified candidates that applied for the position, and Sally was selecting from among the candidates that had applied. We had a good number of very qualified applicants for her position as well.
That's a comforting thing to know, and it's because there's been a lot of people that were quite nervous. First of all, the agency didn't make an announcement that you'd left, so it was a big surprise to a lot of people in the nanotechnology community. And then when they found out about it, it was like, well, gee whiz, is the agency going to be able to function without you? And that's why I was grateful that Jeff Holdridge got a hold of me and said, yes, Colonel, we're alive and well, and everything is going well. And he said he invited me then to have an interview conference with Sally, and she, so far that hasn't been able to happen, but I'm really grateful to hear from you and to hear that that you have confidence that things are going to continue in the same quality that you brought for the past 8 years.
Well, I do. I have very good confidence both in what decisions that the Office of Science and Technology Policy will do, as well as all the members of the Nanoscale Science, Engineering, and Technology Subcommittee. Between the two of them, I'm sure there'll be some really solid decisions made about the selections of the successor, and I have great confidence in the broad breadth of the people that they will be selecting from, more than likely from the agencies that participate in the NSET subcommittee. There's 25 federal agencies that are participants in this subcommittee, and so they have lots of breadth and lots of very good people that contribute to the overall health of the National Nanotechnology Initiative.
Well, I noticed when you testified the day before that you left the agency, you testified before the committee. And my old friend Jim Tour from Rice University was there with you, too. I haven't seen Jim in a number of years, but it was interesting to see that he was also along. What were some of the things that you wanted to really impress the committee about?
In terms of when I was testifying before the subcommittee?
Yes. I mean, you and Jim, and of course, I guess Seth Rudnick was there, Jeff Lee Welzer, and Bill Moffitt. But I was wondering, what was the overall report, if you were to summarize it in a brief summary, what were you trying to really drive home?
Well, there were, I guess, a couple of points that I wanted to strongly emphasized when I was giving the testimony. One was that I still have high expectations and real promise for the potential of the field of nanotechnology itself. I still think that it is one of the most promising technologies we have before us today in terms of its potential contributions to new materials, medicine, energy, and so many other different fields. I think it still is one of the most promising areas of investigation and research and new technologies that we have before us. And I, in the three examples that I gave and during my testimony, I wanted to illustrate at least three of the fields where it, I thought that either nanomaterials are their promise for nanomedicine, in particular the three examples I gave were really great. And so I wanted to emphasize the ongoing strong potential for the field to make many contributions to our society and to the overall economy, economic health of the country, as well as good many major problems that are before us as a world. Then the second thing was to stress the overall health that the NNI itself, the National Nanotechnology Initiative, has had, that it's still one of the strongest interagency efforts within the federal government. And I wanted to emphasize that I think over the 8 or so years that the agencies have pulled together and worked together in a strong effort of communication and coordination, and I think in the early efforts toward real full collaboration, namely where they're pulling together toward common targets and common objectives that they have for the overall federal government, which is, I think, one of the most important things we can do in such an interagency effort. And I think they've done really great steps toward that overall goal. And they've laid out in the new NNI strategic plan, which you can find posted on the nano.gov website, the new strategic plan really lays out some very strong plans for strong interagency activities in the future, in the very near future. And in the strategic plan, they've laid out three particular efforts, one in solar energy, one on nanomanufacturing, and one in nanoelectronics. And each one of those three, what they're calling signature initiatives, they've laid out strong interagency collaborative efforts in those three arenas.
Were you disappointed that the United States is spending less money than other countries, or certainly the European Union is spending more than we are, and other countries are very active. We even know that Iran, the last time I spoke with somebody in Iran, they had 12 labs going just dedicated to the study of nanotechnology. Do you think that we're running the risk of this country losing a leadership position by not spending more?
Well, I think the United States currently is still, I think, the leader in nanotechnology R&D. I think that we're the almost unquestionable leader in the field. there is some indications, if you look at the economic and the investments in nanotechnology, there is certainly the ramping up of R&D funding in nanotechnology is growing quite rapidly in some of the countries. I haven't looked at Iran. I know that they have pretty aggressive effort, but I suspect if you looked at the overall funding dollars, they would be relatively small compared to what the U.S. is investing in. Mm-hmm. Certainly, the only other one that I think that is coming close to investing and being competitive with the U.S. in terms of actual investments and funding would be the collection of the European Union, the 25 or 27 countries of the European Union, and the European investments by through the Commission, plus some of the investments by the individual member countries, would certainly be it's comparable, if not somewhat exceeding, the United States right now. The one country that has really just overwhelmingly invested a huge amount of money in nanotechnology R&D is Germany.
Mm-hmm.
they, on a per capita basis, they are really heavily investing in nanotechnology. But I think the U.S. is currently, I think without question, remaining to be the leader. The only other country that is beginning to produce scientific papers in some significant quantity is China. Their patents and publication of scientific papers in peer-reviewed journals and everything is beginning to certainly be competitive, if not exceeding that of the U.S. So those, the two countries that I would be looking at as far as strong competitors for the United States would be China and the European Union as a whole, if you look at it in terms of the European Union, 25 or 27 countries. But the overall output, the quality of the output, and the overall investments in the United States are still really extremely competitive with anybody else in the world.
Well, Dr. Atig, what do you see? Is there, I mean, how does this operate? Is there a lot of cooperation? I mean, do we get with our buddies in Germany and in England, which is also very active, I understand, the UK, and maybe Taiwan, for example, or Korea? Do we get with our buddies in those areas and start sharing our nanotechnology information, or is all this really closely guarded?
Certainly there is competition in the R&D area, but there's a, at the same time, there's a huge amount of cooperation in some of the areas that would be really critical. There's, a, there's for instance, in the standards arena, I had also chaired the American National Standards Institute Technical Advisory Group to the ISO Technical Committee on Nanotechnologies, and we've had great cooperation at the international level in the area of standards. Each country certainly is vying to have some of their standards adopted at the international level, but it generally comes down to a country that has the strongest scientific and technological arguments are the ones that exercise a lot of sway in the what happens in the standards. There's always politics, but in general, at the standards level, when it really gets down to debate of international standards and their content and things of that nature, the real arguments that hold great sway are really a solid scientific and technological argument. And in the area of concerns about environmental health and safety, there again, there's been significant efforts at trying to share information at what one might consider the pre-competitive level, but in terms of trying to make sure that everybody in the world is looking at concerns about environmental health and safety, there's lots of sharing of information and knowledge and common approaches to environmental health and safety aspects of nanotechnology. So at the standards arena and in environmental health and safety, there's large amounts of sharing at the international level. The ISO Technical Committee on Nanotechnologies has, I think now, 30 participating countries and what's called 11, they're not participating members, they're observers, 11 observer countries. So there's huge amount of participation, particularly in the standards arena. And In this standards arena, there is a lot of, there's work on basic terminology, there's work on instrumentation and how to measure, measurement protocols, and there's one of the working groups also that pertains to environmental health and safety.
Okay, so standards and environmental safety, those make a lot of sense. And I guess if the countries of the world can all decide on standards and on safety, that's probably a good thing. It's been a little over a year ago, I think, that some women died in China that was because of lack of safety issues in nanotechnology. And so I presume that we're working with the safety issues with the mainland also.
Yeah, China actually are what's called the convener of one of the working groups on the technical committee. So in the standards arena, China is heavily engaged. I thought there was some question about the actual materials that were causing the problems with the women that died in China. I'd followed it not real closely, but I had sort of followed that work, and first of all, it was horrible conditions under, regardless of what the materials were, they were horrible conditions the workers were subjected to. But I was not aware that it was ever conclusively demonstrated that it was due to nanomaterials that had caused the problem.
Well, I think you're right. We covered the story on this program actually over a couple of weeks, and it was deplorable conditions that might have caused a death under any circumstances. But I believe that certainly the initial stories that were coming out of China is that it was nanoparticles that caused the death. But I guess I'm going to have to go back and look at my notes to be sure of that. Anyway, what do you see are some of the challenges facing the National Nanotechnology Coordination Office as they move forward without you? What would be some of the things that you would be concerned about that they're going to be doing in the future?
Oh, I don't know if there's any new challenges they'll face. Because of my departure, the challenges that were faced always were the providing adequate support to the really active work that goes on within the Nanoscale Science, Engineering, and Technology Subcommittee. We call it the NSET Subcommittee. Mm. I think the challenge was always trying to provide them with excellent support, trying to maintain good communication with the public in general about the field of nanotechnology, its promises, and trying to be very open about how the work that we're doing that we, the United States, and the rest of the world are doing, trying to ensure that the materials that are coming out of nanotechnology are being considered from every aspect, both in terms of its economic benefit as well as the environmental health and safety concerns. And I think the effort that's coming forward from the NSET subcommittee to make sure that both things are considered in a relatively parallel way is really a good step that's been made over the last 3 or 4 years to make sure that it is safe, but at the same time very offers the promises that are there for economic benefit as well. And so I think that's good. That is probably the main thing, is just making sure that the NNCO provides good support for the subcommittee, that we maintain good communication through the website, through the publications and things of that nature with the broad public as well as business. The one thing that is being moved forward, I think there was a new effort that we had just started, is and improve the communication with industry and improve the communication and liaison with the state. That's an effort we've had.
The emphasis on communication. Well, I hope the people succeeding Clayton Teague at the NNCO take heed of his parting words. We'll say goodbye to Clayton Teague when we come back after the break of the half hour, and we're going to hear from Skip Rung. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today?
John Fletcher Moulton. Between the realm of things we do with unrestricted freedom, and those we do because they are prescribed by law, there exists a middle ground, the domain of obedience to the unenforceable. Here our actions are influenced by our sense of what is proper, responsible, and decent thing to do. They fall, that is, under the rule of an unofficial code of duty to goodness. Civility and goodness belong to the realm of the unenforceable. The real greatness of a nation, its true civilization, is measured by the extent of this land of obedience to the unenforceable.